technically I took second, but I did to actually take first.
You're not kind of in sixth gear the entire time. You're doing something wrong.
I want to get better at opening four-figure magic cards.
And I bet there's probably a dozen players in the world that could play it correctly.
It seems to me that at that point, you're kind of winning more.
Another whiff on an attempt at a red mythic.
That's my childhood sitting on a playmat right there.
First of all, you were my Latin tutor in Latin class in high school, so you know that that's beyond me.
Congratulations on your legacy win. Now you get to go play Standard and Modern.
Less interesting than a beta draft, more interesting than an Ixalan draft. So, you brave soul, welcome to another episode of Tryhards. Alongside the man who revitalized his LGS, the man who won his way in through an IQ, I'm merely Sean Seacrease. Won't you join us tonight as we cover nearly everything there is to cover? Our very first preview card as a cast is from the upcoming M19. Two community pillars are in a bit of trouble. We'll try and help them out this evening. And GP Vegas just came and went. What did we learn from it, if anything? All right, double down this week with this episode of Tryhards. We get it started each week with what are you drinking? All right, IQ winner, I'll let you lead off.
Well, you got to spoil it for everybody, Sean.
I already put up the congratulations on the Patreon site. Did you not peruse it with your very own picture?
I did, in fact, peruse it. I'm trying something new. So I've got a sparkling seltzer water and gin. So since I'm on that low carb diet and I can't have tonic, trying it out. And I got to say, it's all right. I'm trying to figure out a way to make some mixed drinks with soda. And that's what I'm drinking tonight.
If we rewind the tape to about 6 to 8 weeks ago, Brian, this is a man who had just brought home a discount vat of lard because they were supposed to be using it for the next fad diet. Is that what jumped in your mind at the same time when Matt said he was having diet seltzer water?
Well, I thought at first he was going to say diet seltzer water because his stomach wasn't feeling well and he was kind of, you know, getting over a crud or something. But then the next one was like the vat of lard that, you know, he has drowned all of his pork rinds in and he's going to munch on them all cast. So I'm happy to hear that that's not the case. So kudos.
I'm still on that same diet. It's the same diet.
I better not be able to like wrap around my own body next time I give you a hug. There better be enough early there to embrace.
I haven't lost a ton of weight, but the significant other is over 30 pounds down, so it's something's working.
Save us from this madness, Brian. What's in your glass tonight?
I am actually just enjoying, I feel so bougie this week. I'm just enjoying a glass of white wine on the cast. I brought it downstairs. I'm like, what am I doing? But no, we had like half a bottle left in the fridge and the wife's been gone overseas for nigh over a week now. So really, you know, when you go to the store, you're just kind of focusing on sustenance for the children so they don't starve. And I think I've been doing an okay job of that. They haven't gone down 30 pounds, thankfully, in her absence. So I'm just trying to clean out fridge space. So I was like, that looks fine. So the Chardonnay from my Wine of the Month club is actually pretty darn tasty tonight.
Well, for me, something almost as delicious, the best kind of beer, free beer, here in the studio for this evening. I am enjoying the spoils of my significant other's toils this weekend as her softball program brought by some thank you beers, a couple of 12-packs. She was the recipient of the Leinenkugel Summer Shandy, her favorite, and when it gets this hot, I want something that's light and refreshing, the Leinenkugel's Canoe Paddler. Here in the studio for Command Central on episode 106 of Tryhards. Fill up your glass with something delicious, won't you? What magic did you play this week, Brian? It was the rejuvenation of For the Win in Galesburg. How did the community come back together?
It was great. They opened at 2 o'clock on Wednesday, just kind of for an open house. And I love this because I was kind of worried. I was like, what decks do I bring? What do I play? And there was some Facebook message. He said, you know what? It's just going to be open gaming. Just come in, say hi, see the shop. Love what he's done with the inside. Huge, huge counter with cards full already. Great stock already. Has some very cool handmade wooden like chess boards and pens and chopping boards kind of thing, cutting boards. Kind of like the sort of thing that, you know, Wormwood does. I'm wondering if he's going to get some deck boxes in and other things. But no, there were quite a few people hanging out. Some faces I hadn't seen in years just for various reasons. A former owner of the shop from way back when, before it was even For the Win, came in and was kind of like, you know, seeing a ghost from Christmas past. You're like, wow, where have you been hiding yourself? So That was cool to see. A lot of people playing some EDH, a lot of people just playing board games. My girls, I set them up with Uno and Sleeping Queens, which is kind of a magic primer, I call it, game. The Shark Tank and I were basically testing for the RPTQ, which is coming up in Minneapolis for them this weekend. So I got to play a lot of mono red, actually, which they just kind of gave this and said, okay, Tibbetts, take this for a spin against. And, you know, we were testing against Esper. We were testing against blue-white Gift. We were testing against kind of a green-red stompy, a green-blue aggro deck, white-black knights. And I got to say that red deck, as much as I poo-poo just mono red, I'm one of those guys. It does have some play to it. Feel like you're doing something powerful every turn. You feel like if your foot's not on the gas, if you're not kind of in sixth gear the entire time, you're doing something wrong. So, you know, swinging in with multiple Goblin Chain Whirlers is a pretty cool thing. So testing went really well. I think they've come to some really good conclusions. The three who are going, I think they finalized their deck list as of today, but the testing that we did at the shop versus and some testing that they did at a PPTQ at Trademark this weekend, kind of finalizing on some things. The one matchup, I was given the Esper deck play against the white-black kind of Knights deck, and I played six games with that Esper deck and mulled to Oblivion so many times looking for interaction, and I could not beat that white-black deck. I just could not do it. It was just a horrible, horrible matchup when they're swinging, you know, the Knights of Malice and History of Benalia, the vehicles just hitting you from every which way. It was a terrible, terrible matchup. So I was a little disappointed because I really liked that Esper build. It just did not have the game against that white-black vehicles deck. So that was a little bit of a surprise to me. So testing went well. I felt great just getting to sling some cards, had some great conversations. But overall, the highlight of the night was just having a shop to play in. And you could just tell that everybody was kind of more at ease playing at a space as opposed to just, you know, crammed around somebody's kitchen table. So kudos to Michael Fredericks. Going to try to make it down for F&M this week. And whatever format we're playing, looking forward to visiting the shop.
I look forward to getting back to the Berg and playing at the new shop. I had an opportunity. It's been about a month since I was able to hit my LGS for an event they had Modern this past weekend, and I trotted out the Bug Heartless Summoning deck. 2-2 and undefeated in games that went past turn 3. Even though it didn't play out with Heartless Summoning a lot, it still ended up being a great value deck that was hard for a lot of decks to cope with. They asked, how good do you think that deck is? I said, it's sweet. I don't know if it's any good, which I've come to learn from the other mates who were down there playing is apparently my sweet spot in Magic, just sweet things that nobody knows if they're any good. Okay, I'm ready to accept that role going forward in the community. There was one player who brought up an interesting point of view, and I just want to get your guys' quick take on this. Since I'd been to the shop, they kind of reformatted how they do F&M. Instead of a $5 entry with a pack per person plus some others or a pack and a half or whatever it was and a top-heavy payout, they've gone to $7 per person, and you now play four rounds, and you get a pack per win. One of the other players in the room said they really liked the change after initially being resistant because people feel less encumbered to have to bring known level one decks to compete, and people have started to use it more as a research laboratory to check on new tech. Now, you're not going to find decks like Black Red Hollow One in Modern if there isn't some space to create. Matt, do you like your events to give you some room for creation, or do you want to see everything at the LGS level played at that tip-top edge of competitiveness?
I've got kind of mixed bag on it. Our LGS, just to put this in context here, if we do $10 entry, which is what it is at F&M's, they pay 100% of what they take in out in cash. Like at Modern tournaments, they usually pay out top four, top eight, sometimes something like that, because we have fairly large. I think it's smaller tournaments where you lose that first round, you're just auto out of any money. I think it works out better for like what you have, Sean. And I think in the smaller communities, I think it's better to do that. And I also think if you want your shop to be less competitive, more casual, quote unquote, then you want to pay out basically pack per win. I don't know, Brian, what do you think? About the same?
Pack per win, I think, is great. And Sean, to that point, I know that there's kind of the hubbub in the community right now about, you know, preventing pros from playing at your local LGS. Sam Black had a fantastic article on SCG today, kind of regarding this, basically saying, no, you want your pros to be your ambassadors. And if your pro is in your area, why aren't they down at your shop playing? The flip side to that is obviously you don't want your pros coming in and just taking down every single tournament. But in a prize payout, like you were saying, a pack per win, heck, you could sit down with some deck that is a bad matchup. The pros can have bad draws too, guys. It does happen. And, you know, you could take a game and, hey, that pack is worth something. You'd be like, this pack is the one that I beat Pro X with. That's pretty awesome. I really like that. I think it's a great way to have people brew more. In this day and age where you've got so many decks online and so many iterations of sideboards and little tweaks, it's really hard to kind of just ignore all the noise and sit down and say, okay, I have this idea. And I used to love doing that. And I feel like with my time being just as pinched as it is, I sometimes feel like, well, I just want to play. So I'm going to put together something that I find online. I don't have the time to kind of sit down and do the thing. Sean's been really, really good about, you know, sitting down and coming up with something with that Bug Heartless Summoning deck, especially. I feel like this is a great way to encourage people to do that and to come up with some off the wall things, because as you all know, you see one good idea and that launches four other ideas. And then, oh, somebody chimes in and says, oh, well, if you're going that route, then you could do this. And that's the best part of the game to me, is coming up with those ideas with the card pool that you have available. So I'm all for it.
Yeah, I don't want to misrepresent the situation. This is just F&M we're talking about. The shop at the LGS does have every other week a premium style tournament with a bigger buy-in, where you have the pricing much more focused at the top of the finishing ladder, say spots 1 through 4 or 1 through 6. So you're able to get sort of both experiences the way it's set up right now, which it turns out I really enjoy. Prizes focused at the top. It seems one of the tryhards enjoyed just that over the weekend. Matt, you were at an SCG Invitational Qualifier. This was our favorite format, one that we don't see on the SCG Tour very much anymore. Legacy, you made a sweet metagame call. Tell us how this all went down.
I found out on Wednesday of last week that there was a guaranteed IQ of $1,000, and it was Legacy. And I'm like, okay, that just seems too sweet. It was about an hour away. So I decided to go because I'm thinking, you know, it's Legacy. How many people are they really going to pull in? 14 people showed up. I ended up taking a green, white, black Stoneforge with Goyf to go and fight all what I assume would be Grixis Delver. And I had no idea what the metagame was going to look like down there. So my sideboard was kind of a hodgepodge. I lost round one to kind of the Voltaic Key Grin Monolith 12 post deck that has like Chalice and it has like Eldrazi in it. I'm 8th seed going in, and it was just a clean cut, so it was real easy. Ended up playing a green-white, it's very similar to mine, like a green-white-black deck, but his had Knight of the Reliquary in it. And I had taken out my Pithing Needles out of my sideboard, which would have been a huge, huge boon in there. And I also had taken out a lot of Graveyard Hate because I'm thinking, okay, there's not going to be much there. I had Grafdigger's Cages, but that was the all I had as far as Graveyard Hate. Game one against him, I went Inquisition, and then turn two, I did a Him, and then turn three, I went into Liliana of the Veil. That game didn't last a really long time. Game two, we're playing, and it's back and forth. I mean, there's a huge graveyard. I've exiled us, so you Swords to Plowshares to kill a couple of his knights. And finally, we got down to a game state where he had a Ramunap Excavator, and I had a huge Goyf. It was like 7-8, I believe it was. But then he had a knight as well. And so the Knight of the Reliquary was like 6-6 or something like that. And I had my Zealous Persecutions in, which was a freaking all-star all day, by the way. This game I won, but I won, I wouldn't say it was by crappy means, but it was, I didn't want to win the game this way. He went to fetch with his Knight of the Reliquary, and he had his graveyard fanned out like that. He pulled the card out, put the land into play, picked up his thing to shuffle and presented it to me, and he had shuffled back in his graveyard, which was like 35 cards. He's like, oh, crap, what do we do? So the judge comes over, and he's like, you know, I got to give you a game loss. I'm like, yeah, because there's no way we can do that. I want your guys' opinion on this at the end. I've been called out one time because the same exact thing happened where my opponent got a game two game loss similar to this. The judge told me, he said, since you already won round one, you can't actually concede that game without misrepresenting the game matches. Since this is game two, we're required to give him a game loss, and you can't technically concede. You can technically concede game two, but then he'll still have the game loss. So no matter what, you're going to win. I was just like, this is not a way to win, because he was going to probably win that game. He just seemed very unhappy, which it happens. That's very tilting. And then I went to the next round, and I was playing against Grixis Delver, attacking the hand, took him down game one. Game two, attacking the hand, and we got to a point where I was actually Toxic Deluging for like two to kill his stuff, and I ended up taking that down in game two. Our third match in the finals, played against the that mono-red control deck that took down the GP, I think it was. I actually was able to just kill him in two matches. It was really like just attack the hand. He played out Chalice for one. Didn't do a lot against my deck because I have like two drops in there. And I already had a two drops in my hand. Went for broke there. Won that game. And then I took the second game down. And both were getting the IQ invite. We had, the entire top eight had already decided to split. And so he goes, do you mind conceding to me? He goes, I just basically want the SCG point. I need something for it. And I was like, yeah, whatever. You can have it. So technically, I took second, but I did to actually take first. And I want to go back to that play. What do you guys think of that? I mean, do you just take the game loss and just kind of shake the guy's hand and say, hey, good game, and then walk away and let him just leave? Or what do you guys think of winning a match like that in the top eight?
Well, I'm a little confused. So you win game one.
Yep.
He has to take a game loss because of the error of shuffling into the library. Yep. So, but you could not play game three because he has to take the game loss. There's obviously you're up 2-0 and there's no way to do that, correct?
That's correct, because he was going to win that game. And if there was a way for me to say, hey, you can have game two, I would have to play a game three out.
So effectively what the judge told you was that his game loss was on the stack. And if you conceded that game, yes, then it would happen to game three. And then they would resolve his game loss from the stack and you would win.
That's so what I've been told in the past. And
so the only
by
way that would have happened is the only way you guys would have gotten to a game three is if he would have won game one.
Correct.
So I say that that's the judge's ruling. And at this point, we have so much Magic history under the belt that judges know why these things happen. That's a really bad way to lose a game, is to just shuffle your library. And especially when, God, if you're talking about a graveyard that size, how do you pick up that many cards accidentally? You know what I mean? He must have just been out of the moment in just a second. So, yeah, that's too bad. But in my mind, Hurley, that's out of your hands. That's not a decision you make. I would prefer my opponent to just shake my hand and say, sorry, that happened, man. I wish it would have gone differently. And then you get up and walk away, because there's not much else you can do. You don't want to hang around and be the reminder that you're the winner and he lost. And at the same time, the sporting thing to do is to actually just say, hey, good match.
Yeah, I'm with Brian on this. This has nothing to do with you. It has to do with that player's own mistakes that were controlled by him and executed by him in this case. You didn't shuffle his library in. You didn't call a judge and say X, Y, Z. This was a mistake that player made, and the judge issued the ruling that he had to issue on it. So you just happened to be the fortunate beneficiary in that situation. And if I'm that player, the only person I'm mad at is myself, because that's a mistake that you can control.
It just feels bad. It reminds me of back at Eternal Weekend where I won the game in turns that I probably was going to lose for the match when my opponent played an additional land for turn. He already had, I think it was two warnings for playing an additional land. It's super feel bad.
It's feel bad, but at the same time, it's like, okay, he's had two warnings. And that's why judges write that on your match. You know, that's why they have those. If it's an accumulated thing, you kind of have to penalize them in that way, because it's kind of like the kid who has to be told five times to sit down, and then you just basically pick the kid up and sit them down because it's like, well, this isn't working. We have to go to another means. Something else has to happen. It has to hurt. And so, yeah, it's feel bads. And at the same time, it's like, dude, how are you not keeping track of your land drops? Dude, how are you shuffling your graveyard into your library when it's, you know, half the size? Yeah, I get it, but right with Sean, it's the play mistake is on that side of the table. It's not like a judge call that could have gone either way. It was an obvious mistake. But I'd say, Hurley, we're looking at this the wrong way. Congratulations on qualifying for the Star City Games Invitational. I mean, that's pretty awesome. I'm kind of like on the coattails going, hey, can't wait to make a little trip out to Virginia and see what happens.
We may have to make it into a bigger trip. It's December 5th through the 7th. Somebody made the comment and said, congratulations on your legacy win. Now you get to go play standard and modern. You know, it is what it is. It's still pretty awesome.
I'll be there to mop the brow while you're playing, you know, with the Gatorade bottle.
Cut my brow.
Congratulations, Matt. Awesome job. Legacy Rock, Stoneforge Mystic. Check it out. We'll see if we can get Matt to post the list that he had on the Patreon site, patreon.com/tryhards. Yes, sir?
I was just going to say, as soon as it's posted up on Top 8, which it should be on tomorrow, I'll post that link on there.
This week's Patreon shout-out goes to Brian Drelling. Brian has been with us for a long time, and he decided that, well, he has nothing better going on in his life than to give us more money. Brian, if you lost a coin flip on this, you have our eternal gratitude. He upped his patronage from a heart of the hard to a heart of famer. Check it out. If, like Brian, you enjoy the show, patreon.com/tryhard. Brian, we appreciate you. We appreciate everyone who has helped support this show throughout the years. Supporting each other in the community of Magic is always important, whether it's to bring in younger players, to be the ambassador to the community that you can be, or to help those who are in need. And need takes on so many different definitions at different points in our life. Right now, one of Magic's most notable voices and faces is facing a medical emergency. You may have heard about this over the weekend at GP Vegas. Wedge, the Mana Source, his YouTube channel, does all of the great videos. He was stricken with a sudden back injury, actually had emergency back surgery at GP Vegas. No, not in the hall, at a hospital there. He now has a GoFundMe page that has been set up by his sister. I checked on it just before we started recording the cast tonight. In just 2 days, they've raised almost $53,000 of a $150,000 goal. We'll link that GoFundMe page in the show notes. Check it out if you can give anything to Wedge in his time of need. Also, our friends over at the Leaving a Legacy podcast, Pat Uglow and Jerry Mee, they are launching the very first Leaving a Legacy 2 to 5K. Typical of those guys in their, let's say, flexible nature. They're preparing for a whole bunch of different outcomes when they get together with their LGS, and that is Gaming Etcetera. They're doing a fundraiser for a gentleman named Rich Spanholtz and his family. His son, Wesley, suffers from a rare condition. Their ongoing drive to help the Spanholtz family is going to be a part of that legacy event that's coming up on June 30th. They're also going to stream that with Pat and Jerry doing the stream work. So that'll be extremely interesting to follow those two along the way. You guys always have your eye on the community as well. Matt, you were one of the first people to tell me what had happened with Wedge over the weekend.
This is something that I'm just like, wow. Apparently, he does not have medical insurance because he is a full-time content creator. I dug in a little deeper, and there's not really much representation for content creators of this style to get some of the benefits. So you don't have like the SAG as you would, the Screen Actors Guild that pay in every month, and you get a very basic medical insurance, and you get some support and stuff like that. So I don't know. I mean, I was just a little shocked when I was reading. I just always assumed there's probably some way, you know, some easy one. There's some like YouTube union stuff like that, but yeah, he did not have medical insurance, so his sister had mentioned the bill's going to be north of $200,000. I hope he gets better, and they're saying that hopefully he can go home in the next week or two because he's not even able to fly on a plane to go home. He wasn't even able to have the surgery at home, so that's why he's kind of stranded out there. Good wishes to him, and I hope that he was up walking around on the videos and making jokes already about some of the spoiled cards that's were revealed for M19. So sounds like he's in good health.
He's got one of the best attitudes that there is. Yeah, he and his family from upstate New York. And Brian, this has to be twice as scary when you're all the way across the country in this situation.
I can't even imagine that kind of stuff. It's just, you know, whenever a family member is like abroad somewhere, just out of kind of the comfort zone where you can just be there with them to, you know, talk to them face to face or hug them, whatever. It's just tougher. And I know he's a grown man, but it's still the guys in dire straits. So I was very happy, as Hurley said, to see him up and walking around on the video. And the outpouring from the community has been great. Let's get behind this, everyone, and send some good wishes and some real money his way. Because as Hurley says, a lot of people are doing this stuff kind of on a shoestring. They do it because they love to do it. And health insurance is not cheap. So I'm glad to throw my dollars behind this and to make sure Wedge gets back to doing what he does best and was one of the best to do it for the content creator.
Rich, Wedge, be well, you and your families, and here's to a speedy road to recovery. Well, in Vegas, there were two GPs going on this weekend, Limited and Modern, and if you ask some Beta Draft, I'm sure we'll touch on all of those, but Modern was the main focus over the weekend, Brian, and it brought in quite the crowd, even with the technical delays they had going on in Sin City.
Very surprised to see that when I got the text from, who was it, you, Sean, or was it you, Hurley, to let me know that the reporter had kind of, you know, taken a dump on itself and they were having to reboot it and things, and there was a huge delay. That kind of thing can just bring a tournament to a grinding halt. 2,778 people showed up at GP Vegas to play Modern, which I thought was just an absolutely obscene number. I was quite shocked to see Matt Nass do it again. He is now 36-6 in GPs this year, two trophies with his Krark Clan Ironworks combo deck. Every time I see it, I'm thinking, oh, this deck is stone cold dead to wear tear. This deck is stone cold dead to this card and that card and this other card. And somehow he finds ways to win it. He is just an absolutely masterful pilot of this archetype. So congratulations to him. Other names in the top eight that we saw, Ellie Cassis, longtime grinder on the SCG, SCG Invitational winner. Hey, Hurley might be able to see him out in Virginia in December.
Maybe.
He was also on Krark Clan Ironworks. The rest of the top eight, there was Mono Green Tron by two different players. Martin Yuza was on Humans. There was a Jeskai Control list. There was a Bant Coco by Luke Renault. Ben Friedman came with the old school, now it seems like, Grixis Shadow. Sean, I thought that was kind of a strange metagame choice for right now, but obviously being the masterful pilot that he was, took it to a top eight.
Yeah, it was interesting the way Grixis Shadow sort of dove in and out of this tournament at different moments, and we'll see whether the combo-heavy version of Grixis Shadow starts to make another run at it. I think if the Modern metagame becomes more Tron, more KCI, that combo-y version that we saw of the early Grixis Shadow list is probably going to come back into vogue. The one thing that I'm kind of concerned about, though, Matt, is KCI a good choice for your average GP player? People were all up in arms when Grishol Brand certainly first debuted. Just because only Bob Huang can win with that deck doesn't mean you need to ban anything from it. Now, there are other players who have taken KCI into day two, but it really only seems to be a threat to the crown in the hands of Matt Nass. Is this just a case of a player playing a deck extremely well, a la Bob Huang when he plays with Grishol Brand? Or do we actually have to think about making a move against KCI?
I'll be honest, I don't know. And the reason I say I don't know is because this is one of the most technically difficult decks to play that I would rank it up there with, like, Legacy, Doomsday, that type of stuff. It's ridiculous at how difficult this is, and I bet there's probably a dozen players in the world that could play it correctly with no play mistakes or play it fully optimally. The question that stands is the deck powerful? Absolutely. Do you want to keep decks in the format that are this difficult to play, and you want to keep them there only because, you know, they're super difficult, but they are probably, you know, what might be the best deck in the format? I don't know about that. I don't know if that skill threshold is enough to keep a deck in the format. I do think, just pure power-wise, though, I think the deck is probably ban-worthy. I think there's a discussion to be had to say, let's ban this, but I don't think the average player can pick it up at all and play it even remotely correctly.
No, I absolutely agree with you, Hurley. It's not a deck that appeals to a lot of people either. Those kinds of decks where, you know, you're having to sack artifacts and, you know, get the triggers off your artifacts and return things and generate mana. You know, when people do this in other ways to kind of build up huge resources worth of mana, play something huge like an Emrakul, and it's worth noting that Shaheen Serrani got 26th place with the old build of KCI with the Emrakul in the main. Now it's just basically going off on Pyrite Spell Bomb. And I don't think, Sean, that the average Modern player has the patience like a Zach Elsick does, like a Matt Nass does, to really just kind of go through the loop and show your opponent, hey, this is what I'm going to do to you for the next, you know, 10 turns and do these two damage and two damage and two damage. That's not a real sexy way to win. Do you think that that's kind of what's holding people back from playing this deck? Or do you think that it's just the fact that there's so many other good options out there?
Well, I think it's the fact that there are other good options out there, too. And it takes a special skill set and dedication to want to do this. You can't research this deck on Magic Online. You'll run out of time the very first game that you try to go off. So this is almost a paper-only style deck for that point. Brian David Marshall, the Pro Tour historian who was on the GP cast over the weekend, said there is an extremely small group of KCI pros. You've got Matt Nass, Zach Elsick, Shaheem Serrani is one of those guys. And they're a bit of a snob when it comes to the deck, frankly, he said. They said any version of the deck that goes off with anything other than Pyrite Spellbomb is essentially training wheels, and you're giving up percentages in games that you don't need to give up, all for an easier-to-operate win condition, whether that's Emrakul, whether it's Walking Ballista. Can the community that wants to play this deck even agree on how to play it? Maybe not. Maybe that's not necessary. I think it's interesting, sort of the super niche group that's come together around this deck, sort of squabbling like old ladies in a knitting circle over how best to go about it.
Other decks that I thought were interesting from this weekend, the 9 through 16 list was very, very mono green Tron and KCI heavy. I thought that was a very, very interesting that, you know, that was kind of the made up the bulk of the 1 through 16. Things got a little bit more interesting on the 17 through 32 deck list. Guys, 22nd place, Travis De Silva, Thopter Sword, and then Dustin Galt, Esper Gifts in 29th place. I'm happy to see that there's still that room for brewing that we talked about earlier, even in modern nowadays with kind of the known quantities. But Thopter Sword, Sean, what do you make of that deck taking 22nd place at a almost 3,000-person GP?
Sweet. It was unexpected, probably, by many players. There are now a bulk of players, I would say, going to GPs that weren't active at the time when Jerry T was then breaking extended with Thopter Depths. And without experience playing against Thopter Sword, it operates on a little bit different axis. So if you're not ready with how to combat that deck, it can just run away with the game in a turn cycle. So I wasn't surprised to see that someone had success with it. Is it sustainable success? I don't know. That deck takes a lot of splash damage from some very popular sideboard cards in the format. So we'll see if this keeps going anywhere. I was interested in, we've talked about it, Brian, Esper Good Cards is kind of on my radar for things to try out in Modern. And this Gifts deck seems very interesting to me if you can buy yourself enough time. I'm actually interested to see where this goes forward because we've seen a blue-white control deck in Modern. We've seen Jeskai control decks in Modern. Can you get in on some of the great black cards by going this route? To me, this is the next interesting development lane that we'll see the community explore with Black Red Hollow One now seeming to be at its consensus build.
Yeah, this deck was really, really sweet. I love the fact that there's only really two main win conditions on here off of Unburial Rites, which was Elesh Norn and a Grave Titan. The Unburial Rites, you're just trying to keep the board clear until you can do that. The Search for Iskanta's help. A lot of permission in the deck with a Negate, Logic Knot, four Cryptics. This is really, really fun, and this is, I know, right in our wheelhouse, what we would love to play. So I think this was a great choice for the weekend. I think this is a deck that has legs, and I would love to put this together and see what would happen with it.
So I noticed they don't run Celestial Colonnade. They run Creeping Tar Pits, the one of Lingering Souls type of thing, one of Supreme Verdict, one of Thoughtseize. Yeah, basically good stuff, but I think you can do a lot of tweaking here as well. Like, I'm not crazy about having Peak in there, you know, type of thing. But there's probably something here, and there's probably some additions or subtractions you can make out of this as well.
Be interesting to see where this Modern metagame continues to develop after this weekend at GP Vegas. Modern's going to go on the shelf for just a little bit. The upcoming GPs this weekend in Singapore and Pittsburgh are going to be standard, and the RPTQs for the weekend are team events as those teams look to qualify for Pro Tour 25. Brian, you mentioned earlier in the show the Shark Tank sent in its team to Minneapolis for the weekend. Well, so is Q-Town. So we'll see if they get a chance to bump heads. Just a quick shout out to Devin, Lucas, and Trevor, who are playing as a team from the Quincy area in that RPTQ in Minneapolis this weekend. Limited was also one of the GPs in Vegas, 2,079 players. And in the end, after some very intense drafting, Michael Bernat had a 2-0 victory over Austin Mowry in the finals. And a super shout out to Bernat. Not only was he the champ, but he had to get through Steve Rubin in the quarterfinals and then Andrew Cuneo in the semifinals just for a chance to play for the title, which he ultimately ended up taking down. That is a hard row to hoe right there, and he earned it. Michael, congratulations. Guys, Court 19 is starting to dominate our thought process. Wizards has rolled into this chapter of what's seemingly a never-ending preview season, but it's always great to see what gifts we might be getting under the magical Christmas tree. A lot of things have raised eyebrows. Wizards did a lot of previews this weekend at GP Vegas, and the early preview sites have been compiling the information, and at last check, about 170-ish cards, including basic lands and planeswalker decks, are now known in this set. I ran down a few quick hits, I'm calling them, from Core 19. So quick reactions here. White seems like it's getting pushed back into its weenie pedigree. You've got Mentor of the Meek reprint coming in. That's going to be interesting. Militia Bugler. We'll see if White Weenie retakes its throne as one of the pillars of the metagame. I noticed Anticipate is coming back. Now you put Anticipate and Opt in the same standard format. Welcome back to consistent control decks across the board. And if you're new to a format with Sleep in Limited, welcome to Blowout City. That's going to happen. Sleep is an uncommon. Apex of Power, another whiff on an attempt at a red mythic. And I think Thud is going to be anything but. People are going to lose games to that version of Goblin Grenade in a hurry. Brian, have you looked over the spoiler list?
Yeah, definitely looked over the spoiler list. Really excited about Viashino Pyromancer. When it enters the battlefield, it's a 2-1, and when it enters the battlefield, does 2 damage to a target player or planeswalker, which I think could be absolutely essential moving forward. I love Rogue's Gloves as an equipment. Whenever it does damage to a player, you draw a card, which I think is really cool. I just love equipments in general. And then the one thing that really kind of caught my eye was the fact that Wizards is going back to the original Legendary Dragons. You've got the Nicol Bolas, the Ravager. You've got Palladium Moors. You've got Bivictus Asmodi, but the Palladium Moors is the one. Palladium Moors, the Ruiner, Flying Vigilance and Trample has hexproof if it hasn't dealt damage yet. That seems to me to go very, very well with the 6/6 body on that. So looking forward to slinging some dragons in either Limited or in Standard.
If you don't have PTSD from losing Limited to Captain's Claws, you're going to get a similar effect with Sigiled Sword of Valerion in M19. Equipped creature gets +2/+2, has vigilance, and is a knight in addition to its other creature types. Here's the key line. Whenever equipped creature attacks, not deals damage, whenever it attacks, create an attacking 2/2 knight creature token with vigilance. This is the stuff of nightmares. If you try to play control-ish decks in limited environments, Matt, what's been jumping out to you so far during preview season?
There's a bunch of actually really, really cool ones. It's a Volley Veteran, 4-drop for a 4/2. When it enters the battlefield, deals damage to target creature an opponent controls equal to the number of goblins you control. That's really cool for goblins in Modern. I also think the Skilled Animator, which is a 3-drop 1/3 that when it enters the battlefield, target artifact a 5/5. The Return of Reclamation Sage is cool. The one that I might end up playing the most with, Elvish Clan Caller. It's a 2-drop, so it's a 1/1 for green, elf druid. Other elves you control get +1/+1. For 6 and tap it, search your library for a card named Elvish Clan Caller, put it onto the battlefield and shuffle your library. That seems really sweet. A 2-drop lord. I mean, we're pushing Merfolk territory here. All the rares and mythics, can't really, I guess, evaluate them yet because it seems like a lot of these rely upon other stuff that's not been revealed. Are these going to be powerful? Are they not going to be powerful? I'm super excited about Death Baron being back. I just hope we get enough skeletons and zombies. All these other big ones, maybe Gutter Snipe might be fun. I know that was always a fun card for me as well, but this set looks really, really cool. And the rares and mythics don't look ridiculously powerful, but they definitely have some power to them. And I haven't seen one yet that's just basically like win the game type of thing if you pulled it up in limited either. So I'm excited to see the complete spoiler once all that happens.
Last week on the cast, we mentioned that Tryhards has a preview card from Core 2019. We want to set up our thoughts on the format before we share that with you here on episode 106. Guys, as you look at what we know from preview season contextually, I think the question is whether or not certain cards are playable and what that's going to mean to the metagame. For instance, let's take the two splashy planeswalkers that we know about, or at least those that could become a planeswalker. You have a Johnny, Adversary of Tyrants. You have Nicol Bolas the Ravager, part of the Elder Dragon cycle that they're telling the story of with this Core 2019 release. He's a 4-drop, 4-4 for generic and Grixis. When he comes into play, each opponent discards a card, but then you have to pay 7 mana for generic and Grixis to flip him over, so he's a flip creature into Planeswalker. Now, if you flip him over, his Planeswalker side is just bananas. But it better be, because you're investing 11 mana for the possibility to put Nicol Bolas into play on your side. Nicol Bolas, the Arisen. When you look at these cards, and they seem to be the leading mythics so far, contextually, are you seeing a faster metagame? Are you seeing a slower metagame? And is Nicol Bolas playable, frankly, because of the speed of the format right now and the mana demands that card's going to put on you?
Let's just talk Nicol Bolas for a hot second. I think there's just too much Fatal Push in the format to be able to, for him to stick around very long and to flip into the Planeswalker. Once that drops out, which that drops out in October, I think we're talking a different story. I think the format as a whole goes incredibly slow once we hit that rotation at the end of, or in a couple months here, in like 3 months. Currently, I'm not sure a ton of these cards are going to see play. I do see a lot of cards that have greater than 1 toughness, and that's really important in a Chain Whirler world. So some of these are definitely going to see some play, but I'm really, really hoping you'll kind of slow the format down so we can get to some of these like big splashy 6-drops like Palladium Moors and stuff like that.
Until something comes up that really can dethrone the mono red from the top, I think we're still looking at a fast format. I think white's definitely getting some absolute upgrades. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. We can all sit here and speculate, and I know that that's part of the fun, just like it is with NFL drafts, NBA drafts, you know, who's going to win and why, etc. It really is about kind of looking at the full spoiler and zeroing in on those cards that can kind of take advantage of what people are currently playing, come at it from another angle. I would love to see the format slow down just a little bit more so that we're not dealing with just mono red aggro hasty creatures taking down standard tournament after standard tournament. More life gain, I think, from white with bigger green creatures in the way. I think it's definitely just going to happen. And these things go cyclically. You know, the more cards you get into the pool and as things cycle out, I think we're going to see that a little bit. So that's my hope as we move forward.
We know mono red is a big player. Red black vehicles has been intensely exerting pressure on the format. So much so that the Teferi control decks have not fallen out of favor necessarily, but their success rate has taken a bit of a hit. What if the white-based control decks had another, more versatile tool to help them control the board? That brings us up to our very first preview card. We'd like to thank Watsy for trusting us, everyone involved for getting this to us. And Matt, did you receive anything, by the way, from Wizards to induce us to share this card?
I did not receive anything. This was given to us because, and I'm going to use big air quotations here, a valued content creator of the community. I think that's a stretch, but we did not receive any type of compensation for this card.
Brian, did you get anything?
I got nothing in return for this.
We weren't induced in any way. In fact, we feel extremely fortunate to get something that we think is going to be this relevant and possibly metagame setting in Standard, certainly after rotation coming up in the fall. Matt, you reached out to Blake Rasmussen at Wizards and really put this in motion. So you have the honor of revealing the first ever Tryhards preview card.
Cleansing Nova. White, 3 generic sorcery. Choose 1. Destroy all creatures or destroy all artifacts and enchantments. What do you guys think?
absolutely in love with this card. I think that this is so great where you have choices. Anytime that you have a sweeper that you can either sweep artifacts and enchantments or creatures, you're doing something right. So card design-wise, it's great. Five casting cost seems completely fine. I'm not 100% sure it's going to get a ton of play, but it's definitely a card that is going to be in the conversation moving forward. Plus, the artwork on this is so great. The huge angel wings coming out, Noah Bradley just knocked that one out of the park. Cleansing Nova, to me, I felt like this was such a great card for us to have as our first preview.
This is why we set up to talk about the metagame and the pace of it just a moment ago. I love how this card continues the new Wizards tradition of three-drop board sweeper with a drawback. Think of something like Bantu's Last Reckoning. You have the four-drop sweeper, which really isn't seen in Magic anymore, or the five-drop sweeper with quote-unquote upside. Fumigate, you gain a life for each creature destroyed when you play Fumigate. Now you get the flexibility of Cleansing Nova, giving you destroy all creatures or destroy all artifacts and enchantments. If the metagame slows down after rotation and you don't have the hyper-fast red deck, you don't have the efficient, resilient board presence of vehicles, I will trade gaining two or three life for the flexibility of taking out creatures or artifacts and enchantment. This gives my control deck flexibility without having to use a second card. So I think Cleansing Nova, if the metagame slows down a turn, maybe just a half a turn, this is going to become a major player in the format because it allows the control player to dictate what permanents are going to be viable on the other side of the table.
Sean, I agree with all of that. I think the versatility in this card is amazing. You're going to create some, I'm going to call them awkward board situations because you're going to be running some enchantment-based removal. Yeah, as a whole, I think this is an amazing card. If you're playing against KCI deck, being able to wipe all main deck, wipe all the artifacts is a huge boon. We're definitely going to see some of this within Modern. But yeah, amazing card. Thank you, Wizards. And I really think it's going to be a role player for the next 18 months within Standard as well.
Three generic, white, sorcery speed, Cleansing Nova. Destroy all creatures or destroy all artifacts and enchantments. Something tells me that's going to be a major EDH player as well. Cleansing Nova, our very first preview card here on Tryhards. You can pick up the art for that on patreon.com/tryhards if you haven't seen it. And we'll actually be debuting this. If you're hearing this on Tuesday, thank you for being a patron. Matt, you're going to do our Twitter reveal, which will be the first time that the image of this card goes public on Tuesday night. That's going to be June 19th while you're at Through the Decades, your LGS in Louisville. And it's going to be right around, what, 8 o'clock Eastern time?
About a little after 8 p.m. Eastern time, I'm going to reveal it. They have a big Tuesday night Standard tournament. So we're going to go down there, give away some door prizes, and hang out. And I'm going to reveal it between round 1 and 2. So it should be right around, it should go public around 8 p.m.
Well, you know what Matt's going to ride down to Through the Decades? His trusty steed that he has in the elevator with him. Matt, I didn't realize there was that much room in there.
Crested Sunbear, I'm picking this one at $3. That's what you can get them at. It's going to be a card that's going to creep up. Actually picking this because I think it's going to see a spike because Resplendent Angel was revealed. I do think that this is going to see a little bit of a spike there, and this is a EDH kind of all-star, casual all-star. So pick them up now, and you're looking at a $5 or $6 card within the next year or so, and it could even go higher than that in the short term because of the Standard playability. So Crested Sunbear, about $3. I think it's going to go up.
Why haven't we seen any famous horse altars done to Crested Sunbear so far? I don't know. Come on.
For like Justified on it?
Or you could go that way. I mean, this is the guy who lives in Derbytown, so I figured, yes, you would go. I figured you'd jump in with something obvious like Secretariat, but you want to go American Pharaoh, you want to go Justified, whatever you want to do, you could do that. Or maybe more famous horses. Maybe I'm going to show my age here, like Mr. Ed or something like that. I don't know. We'll see.
I don't have enough peanut butter to make him talk. So
if anybody ends up going down this road, you mentioned a card that I think we're about to spend at least three more minutes with. It's time for 3 minutes to brew this week. Brian, what's caught your fancy?
I was so taken aback when I saw this card, Resplendent Angel. Out of Corset 2019, This is a card that looks to be absolutely bonkers to me. So I'm curious to see where you guys think it's going to play. 3/3 Angel for 2W1 Flying. At the beginning of each end step, if you gain 5 or more life this turn, create a 4/4 White Angel creature token with Flying and Vigilance. But if you want to get real deep into this card, there's another text line. For 3W3 generic, until end of turn, Resplendent Angel gets 2/2 and gains lifelink. So then that would make it a 5/5 flying lifelinker. Do you see this? Obviously, with Crested Sunmare, you're kind of thinking along white and lifelink and slowing the metagame down a little bit. Do you think this is going to be one of those role players kind of hyped up as much as Lyra was when Dominaria came out? And is this going to be the resurgence of white big angels as a tribal?
You know, I think this goes in two decks, actually. I think one is a life gain deck that, you know, your Crested Sunmare goes into. And that's going to be the more casual, like, you know, I'm going to take this to FNM style of deck. And I think the other deck it goes into is actually competitive angels deck. I think this competitive, this quote unquote competitive angels deck is going to be, you know, your Lyra is going to be your 5-drop. There's going to be a 4-drop in there somewhere. I'm not sure what it is. And then this is going to be your 3-drop. The only downside about this is it does die to a braid. But again, a braid is going away. So I think it's going to be just kind of a value flying deck. And I'm not even sure what color you want to pair with it. Maybe blue for some control. I think you could go either blue or red. I definitely think that you want to find that magic 4, which Ajani, Adversary of Tyrants, could be that magic 4 wide drop that goes into that curve. But I think you're going to need some flyer defense, and I think you're going to need it badly, because I think this is just going to get out of control whenever you gain 5 or more life. Sean, what do you think? What color would you pair this with?
I don't know if you want another color to pair this with. White has a long tradition of these kind of army in a can creatures, and Resplendent Angel seems to be the next one. Now, it doesn't bring the additional bodies into play on ETB, but it does give you one card that you can play through a la Pack Rat at this point. Until this card is answered in Resplendent Angel, you don't have to use any more cards as resources. You can just reuse your mana to develop an ongoing board presence. Resplendent Angel, Crested Sunmare, who we just talked about in the elevator. Maybe we need an altar of Resplendent Angel riding Crested Sunmare into battle, because these two would seem to be best friends with their triggers and the tokens that they create. The first card I actually thought of with this, though, is Sigil of the Empty Throne. It gives you this ongoing value from a passive point of view until your opponent reaches out and knocks it off the board. So this becomes a must answer. The difference is, this is a 3-drop must answer. Crested Sunmare and Sigil of the Empty Throne are 5-drop must answers. There is a huge difference on those two points on the curve, but when you look at the added text, I think this is suddenly the card that is going to define how you have to interact going forward.
People who know me know that I love 4/4 White Angels as just a magic staple. I've cast very, very many in Treat the Angels in my day. Sean mentioned the other card, Sigil of the Empty Throne. When we were back to Innistrad not so long ago, Descend Upon the Sinful gave you a 4/4 White Angel after exiling the board. That 4/4 White Angel, going all the way back to Sarah Angel, just seems so iconic. And so when there's a creature who's cranking these out, as Resplendent Angel is doing if you're on that life gain, it seems to me that at that point you're kind of winning more. At the same time, if you can get to the point where you're gaining 5 or more life a turn, you're doing something right, because that just seems to be a good way to keep those aggressive decks at bay. So Resplendent Angel, this is not a card that needs to be paired with another color. You have to answer this card. It alone is going to define how the interaction goes. And if you do not have something able to deal with the 3 power, 3 toughness of it, and God forbid it should be coupled with Lyra or other things to give it hexproof or indestructible, it's just going to run away with games. So Resplendent Angel to me looks like a format-defining card moving forward.
Resplendent Angel, Shalai, Voice of Plenty, Lyra Dawnbringer. That is not a curve I want to see my opponents use on the other side of the table once Core 19 is legal in various and sundry formats. This week's 3 Minutes to Brew, Resplendent Angel here on Tryhard. Guys, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week? For me, I stayed awake late on Sunday night and watched the beta draft from GP Vegas. I want to get better at opening four-figure magic cards. Brian, how about you?
Open better.
Oh, yeah. Open better. Crack packs better. Be in the right seat at the right time.
Yeah, yeah. Get that Mox and that underground seat at the same time.
Exactly. That's who I want to be. No, that was an absolute ball. Going back to the roots, I just love seeing those cards, not even seeing any text, but just seeing a picture, and you're like, oh, my God, is that burrowing? Oh, God, what is that, Fogwraith? You know, just seeing those cards, and some people are like, how do you know the names of those?
It's Wall of Wood!
That's my childhood sitting on a playmat right there as people are handling it with these, you know, latex gloves. I thought that was just absolutely a ball to see that happen. I hope they do more of that, and there's been a huge resurgence in the people saying Rochester draft, what's that? It was absolutely fun to see. I'm looking forward to seeing more of that. What I did to get better at Magic was, along with that, Sean, just being a giddy schoolboy again, watching the beta draft at GP Vegas late night on Sunday, but also to just kind of reconnect with a lot of people at the LGS, wishing the Shark Tank, Eric, Rob, and Bergman good luck as they head to Minneapolis this weekend. I'm sure they're going to avail us very, very well with their skills. It was so great testing with them. I'm looking forward to playing Magic with them on a more regular basis now that the shop's doors are open, just, you know, being that ambassador of the community in any way I can.
Brian, would you care for a friendly wager between Team Quincy and Team Galesburg at the RPTQ this weekend? How about this? The person whose hometown team finishes lower in the standing has to edit the next episode of Tryhards.
How about we put something that's more in line, like, because if you put that on the table, I'm going to say, fine, the next section of Latin 4 papers I grade in September, I'm shipping your way.
First of all, you were my Latin tutor in Latin class in high school, so you know that that's beyond me at this point. So what do you say, a gentleman's wager between the Shark Tank and, we'll say, Q-Town?
Yes, between the Shark Tank and Q-Town, let's say six-pack of choice.
I'm down with it. All right, this is an audio handshake. Come on, guys, don't let me down this weekend. Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
When I learned last minute what this tournament was, and I said, you know, this is a smaller tournament, I have a possibility of winning it, I actually went and did a ton of research on the Legacy metagame and did a ton of research and said, you know, hey, is this good? What's good here? What should I play? And it really reinvigorated, you know, kind of like my Legacy. I was like, ooh, what about this deck? For the first time in a long time, I didn't go, oh, this deck is sweet, I'm going to play it. I've said, this deck looks good, and I think it preys upon the metagame. So it was kind of a big step for me to be able to do that. I made some bad sideboard choices, but for the last minute stuff, I'm so okay with that. And I just got to say, I'm super glad that I was able to actually do this and play this while researching what the metagame is and how to prey upon it.
Thanks for joining us for our first ever preview card here on Tryhards. Oh, you brave soul. May all your beta packs give you power. We'll see you next week here on Tryhards.